Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Deborah, thanks for joining me on the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I have to first ask, how did you find me? How did you find Organize 365?
Yeah, so I found you back in, I think it was 2016. I had just finished law school and was having some mental health issues. And so I was moving back in with my parents. And the move out of my apartment was terrible. And it just, I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't packed. And so I felt so frantic and all over the place. So I just, it's a 3-hour drive to my parents. So I looked up on the podcast app, just organization. And yours was one of the first ones that popped up. And I've been listening ever since.
You know, I don't talk a lot about the move from your childhood bedroom into your first apartment or college. And then if you go to grad school or like that whole like 20s, like my kids are both in their 20s. And I said, okay, this is the year of doing everything. Like you'll live in all these different places. You'll have all these different jobs. Like you'll just try everything. You just try everything in your 20s. And it drove me crazy not to have all my stuff in one location. Like when I was at college, there were things at home. And in the summer, I took college classes every summer. So I graduated with 2 degrees in 4 years. So sometimes I was at home in summer. Sometimes I was in a makeshift apartment in the summer. And then when we graduated, I lived on my own for 1 year in a townhome, still had some things at home. And then Greg and I got married the second year after I graduated from college, but we lived in his condo for a year. And then we bought our first house on our 1 year anniversary was when we moved in. And I felt like finally I cleared everything out of my parents' house. I moved into the house that we still live in today. And having everything in one place, even though it wasn't organized, it wasn't like it was a whole bunch of hand-me-downs, at least I finally had all of my stuff in one place. And that 7 years of not having everything in one location really bothered me a lot.
I think by the time, so when that move happened in 2016, I had moved, I think, 16 times since I graduated high school. Wow. Between summers and then moving back to my parents and then back to school and then to law school. So I was kind of all over the place, which was exhausting and frustrating. So I like to joke that I'm kind of in the accumulation phase and the downsizing slash legacy phase at the same time, because I'm constantly like, all right, am I going to want to move this when I have to move, like when in yes. about a year or so? So I'm always downsizing and getting rid of stuff so I don't have to move it next time.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, even since that last, mm-hmm. that move in 2016, I've moved 3 times since then. So it's
so you're not still in your parents' house?
No, I am not. I am not. I moved out of their house a couple years ago. I think 2017 I moved out. Yeah.
Okay. So then where are you living? Who are you living with?
So right now I am living up in the Bay Area of California. We actually moved in last April. So at the beginning of quarantine and everything, which was kind of nuts. And so my significant other had gotten a job up in NorCal versus Southern California. So we moved up here. So it's the two of us and the cat.
How fun. So are you enjoying it? Like, are you enjoying being in one place and having all your stuff?
I am. It is really nice to not have a storage unit and trying to keep track of mm-hmm. that along with what's at, you know, my, wherever I'm living at the time. So it's been really great to, you know, even though we'll probably move here from here relatively soon, like for at least a year to feel a little settled, because we didn't want to jump into settling right after moving to a new place, a new area.
Yeah. So I can totally understand like that desire to almost like nest and feel mm-hmm. organized and like feel like you have a place that you don't have to constantly be wondering about. So is that why you decided to start getting organized? Like, what were your first steps?
Yeah. So I've actually always been a pretty organized person. My mom likes to say that, like, so when I was younger, before I can even remember, she would always have to be careful with her language. She would say, go tidy your room. Because if she said, go clean your room, my first step was going in and emptying the closet, which just always made things worse. So because I was in kind of that state of like, I was feeling like that classical millennial experience of overeducated, unemployed, and moving back in with your parents. I just felt like life was in chaos and I needed something to kind of feel grounded a little bit. And so my solution was, oh, it's just because I'm not organized. That's what's going on here. So if I just get organized, everything will be okay. So yeah, that was kind of what led me to the thought process of like looking up organization, finding you, and then just following you from there.
But I talk a lot about like getting your whole house organized. Like the majority is, I talk a lot about productivity and your schedule and your mindset. But then when I talk about organizing, 90% of the time, I'm talking about my life today as a middle-aged woman organizing an entire house. Like what resonated with you as you're driving home to move home?
Absolutely. So during that drive, I think one of the podcasts I listened to, you talked about your kids having their mini apartment. And so that really helped my mind shift, even just with that move of thinking of my room at my parents' place as being my mini apartment. And that helped me feel like I had a little more control over the situation, which I think was really good. Just not even necessarily practically, but just from a mindset perspective of feeling a little bit less weird about moving back in with my parents.
Yeah. And I think especially like you mentioned, you're a millennial, like my son is one of the oldest Zennials, Generation Z, and he's living at home and he has his former bedroom and his sister's former bedroom as his like two parts of his apartment. Mm. Of course, I just put a treadmill in the one that we're using as a dressing room. So he doesn't really have that one anymore. And then Abby has the whole basement. And we literally do constantly at home talk about apartments. And when the first floor is getting away from my liking, I will say, look, you have your apartment. You have this whole space. All this stuff goes down there. You don't have a drop zone up here. You don't have whatever. Like, and I use this terminology in the house. I think it is extremely liberating and puts everyone more on an adult equal playing field when you're living in the same communal space, even though it was your parents' home of origin and you grew up in that house. Like as you become an adult, Greg and I are having a lot of conversations about, you know, I have a very different view of adult children and how to establish adult relationships with your kids. It's been something I've always focused on because I see it as the number one struggle. Parents who continue to parent in their 20s instead of developing this and I don't like the friendship relationship. Like, it's not like I'm your best friend, but respecting your adulthood. Like, I respect that you are an adult and you are making decisions and you will Google it and you have the final say. And if you ask my opinion, I will give it. And if you don't, I will not. So I remember Greg's mom would not give her opinion unless it was asked for. And I at first was like, ugh, she like doesn't care. She doesn't like tell Greg every single thing he should do all of the time. And by the time I was in my 30s, I was like, oh, she treats him like an adult. Like it was like a whole different way of thinking because my parents provided for me for so long that they treated me like a child. Like they did not, even to this day, like my mother's interactions with me are often as a parent trying to impart her knowledge or, you know, this is how she would do it. And so I should follow this way. I'm 48 years old. I've raised my kids now. I have a company. Like I want to be in a more egalitarian relationship. Not that I don't respect and honor my parents, but I am an adult. And so I think that is the hardest thing. How do you try to move towards that kind of a relationship in your childhood home, living in your childhood bedroom that still might have kitty cats on the walls or whatever it is. And I think just changing the name of that bedroom to apartment really makes everyone stop and think, oh, an apartment, a separate entity within the family. It changes things.
It does. I think for me, it kind of, so even something as simple as we were never allowed to have TVs in our room growing up. And so, when I started thinking through that, I put up a monitor and with a DVD player, like, you know, connected. So if I wanted to watch something, I didn't have to do it on my laptop with the, you know, I had a place where I could watch TV. My mom at first, bless her heart, she was just like, all right, so laundry day is on Thursday. So make sure all your laundry is in. And I'm just like, mom, I am almost 30 years old. I'm not having you do my laundry. And, you know, kind of carve out a little space in the refrigerator that's for the food that I'm going to cook and that kind of thing. And so I think that the apartment mindset was really helpful in kind of allowing me to feel free to kind of create that the relationship as a more parent adult child relationship.
Yeah. And sometimes it comes from the parent saying, look, here, I'm giving you this space to be an adult and changes the relationship a little bit. And sometimes it comes from the 20-30-year-old saying, hey, life circumstances, we're in a pandemic. I live here now, but I'm still going to come and go as I please. I'll be respectful and you can know where I am when it's necessary or like when I'll be back, but not necessarily where I'm going and with whom and for how long and what we discussed. And, you know, like all the things I would have told you when I was 14, like
exactly.
It really is a different kind of battle. Balance. And I see, I don't see a lot of good models out there for it. And so I find myself a lot of times having to explain to Greg why I think the way I do and what I'm doing and why the kids are so freely come to me with some things and don't with others. And I don't worry about either, like whether they come to me or not, like I don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the transition is maybe more difficult now than it's been in the past because we can be so connected so easily. So when I was an undergrad, it was easy to just text my mom and say, hey, what kind of ground beef am I looking for, you know, for such and such recipe? And so as that starts to fade, you don't have to figure it out on your own as much as maybe you used to have to. And so as that lessens just naturally as with experience and with age, I think it kind of throws a lot of parents off of, wait, you used to have to text me, you know, every day about the grocery store paying bills or what have you. And now I'm not hearing from you so much for advice. And I think that transition becomes harder and less defined.
Yeah, that's so good because my kids still do ask me all those questions. And a lot of the time it frustrates them, but I say, Google it. Like, even though I know the answer, I will say, Google it, look it up, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And they're like, no, we want you to tell me. And I'm like, no, I'm going to work. And like going to work and being at work and not being home. They're really like, where is she? Why is she here? How come she's not answering the text? Where's mom? Where were you all day? And it took over a year for my kids not to text me and expect an immediate response.
Yeah.
I'm working. I'm growing this whole company. And so it goes both ways, but then it leads to, so what are your conversations then? Mm-hmm. If they're not, when's your laundry due? And, you know, how do I do this? Or I want to move out. Like, you really have to come up with what you're going to talk about instead of parenting conversations.
Yeah, definitely. It does change that dynamic. And I think, because you're, like you said, it is both ways, because it allows the parents to kind of not separate from their identity as being parents, but just kind of the day-to-day living out of that role changes. And so they get to kind of embrace new identity. So you with your company, like, you've gone all in and have a lot of freedom in that. And I think that's wonderful. And I think for a lot of parents, it's hard to shift that identity if they've been so invested in their kids.
Yep. I almost think that, you know, we often think about it from our point of view. So you're thinking about it from the child's, I'm thinking about from the parents. There is a possibility that not being available to my kids, they then would say, well, mom doesn't care because she used to be available to me 24/7 to answer all of my questions. So it really is a shifting of the whole relationship to, I'm available, not at a moment's notice, but I am available for advice or opinion if you want it. And then you get to decide what you do with it. But then I'm also available and need to carve out time for a new relationship built on mutual likes or even things that maybe I don't like or they don't like, but we do together. Like, Joey works here at the office, so we talk a lot about business and we have a lot of that. Or I'm very invested in the fact that he has an audio engineering business. And even though the world is closed, we're always talking about what that will be like when he does it and different equipment. And he knows somebody that actually ran the sound at the inauguration, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
Like, that he met on Instagram. I'm like, you gotta be
that
kidding.
Awesome.
That's so cool. You know, like, I mean, just knows him through Instagram. But like, we had that whole conversation. If I was saying it's time for laundry and what do you want from the grocery store? And I'm going to do like, you use up your words. Like, you have a certain amount of words that you use with each person. And so when you don't use the words for parenting and you realize that you're not conversing, it kind of forces you to then find a new way to converse.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I like that thought process. I think that's a good point that I hadn't thought about it from that angle before.
Yeah. It's so nice to have these kind of conversations in these Wednesday podcasts, because this is real life. Like, everybody can go through an organizing course, get a Sunday basket, whatever, but how does it play out in different ages and stages in different countries and all these different areas? So, so glad that you're sharing all this information, Deborah.
Of course.
All right. So you're driving home. What was the first time that you noticed something was organized that wasn't organized before, after you started listening?
Yeah, I think one thing that really stands out to me is I kind of, so this was long before you had physical products or anything. So, but I had put together my own, like the binder based on the binders based on how you laid them out in your podcast and what have you. And so I was going to a new doctor and he asked, you know, what medications have you been on recently and whatever. So I just was able to pull out this sheet and I'd been on, I think at that point, 12 different medications at different times. I know that you're familiar with that whole battle in terms of the mental health issues and that kind of thing, trying to find the right cocktail, so to speak. And so I was able to just hand the sheet of paper. He was like, oh, okay, this is great. Can I make a copy of this to put in your file? And I was like, absolutely. You do whatever you need to do. And that was a real moment of feeling very confident. And like, I went from these piles of paper that were overwhelming that I had to pack into boxes just as they were, to being able to hand this sheet with this, you know, crucial information and just hand it over. And I felt prepared and very adult having that information.
Yes. And, you know, any kind of mental, like if you're dealing with psychiatry or like any of these medications that are based on behavior and mood and anxiety and all of those that impact each person differently, you literally can spend half or more of your appointment just going through the med list. And then you had like real questions you wanted to ask that either you ran out of time for, or you rush, or you asked two out of three and you forgot to ask the most important one. And now you're out the door and you cannot get another appointment for like 3 or 4 months. Like they just don't even have spaces. There aren't even emergency appointments available. So if you don't get your questions asked, you don't get them asked or answered. And so if the med list, which is always first, gets done quicker, you have more time for real conversations about, hey, what about this alternative therapy? What about this new medication I found? What about lowering that dose? I've done some research on this, or I'm going to be moving. So what is the implication of this? Or I want to get pregnant. What is the implication of this? Mm-hmm. Like those are longer conversations that often there isn't enough time to have at the doctor's office if you're going through med lists, especially with a new doctor.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, it was really great. And I also had in my binder kind of a timeline where I showed which medications were overlapping when and for how long, which I think because the way that medications can interact in strange ways, it's good to have that kind of timeline to give the doctor a little more context to how each medication may have been affected by any other medications.
Yeah. And the, I cannot remember the statistic because you guys know I'm terrible about this, but this was at least 3 years ago. I was in strategic coach with some other, there was a doctor there. And he said that the amount of information that we have doubled every 11 months in all of medicine, but there was this one field that it doubled every 4 months. That was 3 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
I say that because when you present your med list and how it overlapped over the course of your life to a doctor today, there may be research that happened in the last 11 months that shows like this combination was actually a great combination, or this combination should have never happened and it caused this thing over here. Like they can look at that timeline with today knowledge, looking in the past and saying, you know what, now we know that this one should always be paired with this other one over here. So let's try it again and let's try it in actually a lower dose. I know that there's one of the medications that Abby's on that actually she needs a lower than normal dose in order for it to be effective. So yeah. Knowledge is power. Like, Absolutely. Especially with the doctor, like the more information you can give a doctor, the more they can start thinking about different ways of treating and supporting versus just trying to be a fact information getter, like out of you.
Absolutely.
So what's happened since you started on this journey of getting organized that you didn't expect to happen?
One thing that I didn't expect was to continue to be struggling so much with mental health issues. Like I would take notes on, well, when I move out of my parents' house and when I have my own house and this, that, and the other, you know, here's what Lisa says to do. When I reach that stage, not anticipating that I would be struggling with issues still. And I think that, one thing I wrote in here and I fully believe is that Organize 365 has been really helpful for grace. I know a lot of people say that, but Organize 365 is great, gives you grace. And I repeat to myself, like that mindset shift, I'm constantly repeating progress over perfection, progress over perfection, progress over perfection, which is just very helpful for taking it, you know, one step at a time. So when I'm feeling overwhelmed or frustrated, I can put on there certain podcasts I know will like episodes that will help, you know, even if I'm not organizing that part, of the house That's or great. Whatever. It's just like, hey, I know Lisa's going to say some of these things that are very affirming and very just like helpful. Like, hey, even if you're just doing mindset shifts, that's okay. Like, that's still important. So I think that has been really big for me in the past year since I first found Organize 365.
That is so cool. So if we like press into that a little bit, do you think that you're trying to achieve a certain level of organization that you'll get to eventually, or maybe your brain hasn't caught up with that this level of organization you have is actually enough and that that is not a level we're going to get to? Or like, do you have any idea why that might be?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. This is what's coming to my head now is on the Clutterbug profiles, I am yes. so a cricket. I am 100% a cricket. But my boyfriend he has some ADD issues, and he is very much so, I think, a bee probably.
A busy
and
bee.
So, yep. So he wants everything out and able to see it. Cause if there are snacks that are for him in particular, if they're in a cabinet, he is not going to remember they're there. They are not going to get eaten.
I think that's a butterfly.
I think it's a butterfly and a bee because yeah. the difference, though, is that the bee is visual but detailed, and the butterfly isn't even detailed, I think. I listened to this just the other day to prepare for the interview.
Cass is probably like, no, you guys are saying it wrong.
Yeah, that's possible. anyway, that's really hard as a cricket. I want everything behind closed doors. I don't want to see the stuff. Like, the idea of open shelves in the kitchen like gives me a heart attack. Like, no, why would you do that?
I don't understand that either, by the way. And I'm a busy bee.
Yeah.
I don't get the open shelving thing.
Yeah. Not my thing. So at first, like, there was some real struggles of like how to make me feel okay in an environment that has things out and kind of like contained, but still visible, but still works for, my significant other to be able to see the things that he needs to see. And at first that was very difficult, but I think that being reminded that different people have different organizational styles, and that's okay. There's not a right way to do it. And also, your home doesn't need to be Pinterest worthy. Like, I think I want my home to be Pinterest worthy and to come in and just feel so clean. And so
I do too.
Like, put together. And it's just not like that's like, for some people, they get there. That's great. But I think for most people, like, that's just not even a livable, like, idea. Like, if you have a Pinterest-worthy house, you're going to be scared of messing it up, I feel like. So I think giving myself grace, too, it doesn't need to be something that you're going to post on Pinterest. It just needs to be functional. And that's why I love you saying that you're a functional organizer. Like, I really appreciate that. And I'll try to remind myself, look, this doesn't need to be perfect. This doesn't need to be organized down to the smallest, you know, push pin. You need to be able to find what you need when you need it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I do, I walk through my house. It's perfectly organized, perfectly clean. And I'm like, it's just missing something. That would be a decorator's touch. Like, you see on Instagram, my house is beautiful. Like, my house is very nice, but it's not a magazine. It's not a magazine. And I do too. Like, I think, oh, it'd be nice if I had like fresh flowers there, which would die in a week and then I'd have to take care of them. Or, you know, like something cool on my bookshelf. And then I'll look at other people's bookshelves that are Pinteresty. And I'm like, I go to stores. I'm like, oh my gosh, you pay like $40 for this piece of coral just to sit on the bookshelf. So it looks like I can't reconcile with the spending $500 to get the bookshelves to look like they do on Pinterest. And I'm a very memory type person. So none of those things I would purchase at a store have a memory to me. So I have like my grandma's button jar and I have all these poker chips from my dad's house and like this old fashioned vase and my grandmother's hutch. And so I have these like memory pieces I love, but they're definitely not Pinterest. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I also struggle the same way. We actually just got some new bookshelves. They won't even be in until May. And I'm already thinking like, maybe now is when I buy some things for bookshelves. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. You'll have to follow me on Pinterest to find out about that one.
But yeah, I'm with you on the like sentimentality of items around the house. And I think that that's what makes it feel like home. Mm-hmm. And so learning to be okay with that, like, hey, this is what is home to me. It isn't what would be home to other people, but it's what makes it work for me. Or just another example is, you know, you see the books organized by color, which always looks so beautiful. That is not, I know myself, that is not going to work for me. That's not how I look for books. Like if I'm looking for a certain thing, I'm not looking for it based on color. Like that's just not practical for me.
So that must be the cricket in you. Cause I did do the books mm-hmm. by rainbow color. I love it.
Yeah.
Cause I always know I'm so visual. So see, busy bee. Mm-hmm. I know what color all books are mm-hmm. and I know what color the title is. So I can find it so fast that way. Whereas yeah. I used to have all my books sorted by like religious books, medical books, memory books. Like now I have them sorted by color and I love it. So yeah. I think that's another thing. Like it, whatever you want, like whatever works in your house, it doesn't exactly. have to be what works for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So have you experienced any unexpected events in the last 4 years of your organizing journey?
I think moving so much was a little, a little unexpected. I'd hope to be a little more settled at this point, but I think it's more for me unexpected events in the sense of unexpected non-events, things that I expected to have happened by now, maybe haven't happened, I haven't had kids yet, so I'm not dealing with, like, I thought that I would be dealing with all of that phase, the beginnings of that phase of life and what have you. So I think there's been a lot of more dealing with unrealized expectations and working through that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say that's kind of been a big organizational, because it does, it's a mindset, I guess, more so hurdle, and how that affects all of life, including how your home or your life are organized and the systems you use and don't use.
Yeah, I find that so interesting, because there have been phases in my life like that, and phases where you get thrust into a new phase of life sooner mm-hmm. than you expect, like when my father mm-hmm. got sick and passed away. The unexpected of life, the unexpected timing of life, or that you'll even go through those stages, is very difficult, I think, for a mm-hmm. lot of people. And in a podcast you haven't heard, but everyone will have heard by the time this one is aired, I talk about the diversity and inclusion on Organize 365's team. And mm-hmm. in there, 50% of people don't have kids, you know, mm-hmm. on our team, not counting yeah. all the Generation Z guys we have working in the warehouse right now, but of the women on our team that have been here for a long time, 50% of them don't have children. And for most of those, it's not by choice. Like for yeah. some, it's by choice, but for most of them, it's not by choice. And mm-hmm. a significant number are not married, some by choice, some not by choice. And I think we all have unrealized expectations. That's a great way of putting it, in just all kinds of areas. Like I always mm-hmm. wanted to be a CEO, and now I am, mm-hmm. but it's at a different phase in life than I thought it would be. And it, you know, it's so hard when you think you have mapped up what your life is going to look like, and then realizing that you really don't have control over those things. You have control over a lot of things, but you don't have control over other people.
Yeah.
Significant yeah. others, babies, things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just something, it's part of hashtag adulting, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of related to, I think this was kind of interesting. So I actually wrote the email that prompted the, how to change your focus from time to money podcast episode.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And so I get super excited every time you re-aired. I'm like, hey, it's my podcast.
You and too I think, can get a podcast by sending me an email about what you'd like to hear on the podcast.
And so, yeah, I think that also kind of frames, it's a really good, they're really good strategies for how to deal with the unexpected events of life. Because if you're shifting from like time to money, mm-hmm. or from money to time, sorry, you have more control in some ways over time than you might over money, depending on your circumstances. And that's going to be more consistent over time, no matter what your life circumstances are. You've got the time, regardless of whether you've gotten married or haven't gotten married or have kids. So I think that that's a more consistent strategy that will carry you through all phases of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Explain that a little bit more. So there's a relation of time and money.
Mm-hmm.
Now explain it one more time, what you just said.
Yeah. So in that episode, you talk about changing your focus from money to time mm-hmm. and the idea of, like, you know, sometimes buying time back by hiring things out and delegating.
Yes.
And I think that changing that focus as a kind of life strategy to thinking about things in terms of time versus in times of money, in terms of money, that carries you through different phases of life, regardless of how much money you're making, you still have the same amount of time, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. that focus, shifting that focus can help you in all phases of life, regardless of where you are and what you expected your life to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think too, and I can't speak for men. I'm not a man. I see this up until this point as being a more female issue. I'm realizing that society is changing much faster than we're changing in our homes, and gender equity and equality is becoming very prevalent, especially in millennials and Generation Z, not so much mm-hmm. in Gen X or baby boomers, and not so much at home because we don't change as much. So I'm trying to change my languaging around this and my thoughts, but historically, and for myself as a woman, my generation and myself personally, I have been the default parent. And this whole mm-hmm. pandemic and my growing Organized 365 as a business with hashtag adulting children has forced my husband to become the primary parent during the day, mm-hmm. which he was very resistant to and still struggling with, because you're learning parenting at 54 with adult kids. It's a little bit easier when they were babies. I was exhausted, but you know what I mean? So he's become the primary default parent during mm-hmm. the day. And I haven't verbalized that, but that's basically what has happened. Mm-hmm. And it is majorly a shift. Similarly, I have been the primary default household fixer person. And he lost it the other day when I was at work, and I've only been at work for 3 weeks at the time of this recording, but I was at work and like all kinds of people had to come to the house, and Frank is barking and Hunter is barking, like all this is going on. And he says, "This is exhausting." I said, "I know, I did it for 2 decades. He goes, "Well," he said, "it's so much." I said, "Yes. And for me, it was worse because I had to take care of children at the same time too. And everything mm-hmm. else, like it was 10 times harder than what you're doing today." Like perspective. Mm-hmm. When my father became sick and we had to settle his estate, obviously my sister and I are both females, but if you look at most families, if there are males and female children, usually it is the female children who become the caregivers and the estate doers, and the boys handle the money at the banks and do the phone calls. And like, I realize those are just total gender stereotypes, but they're very real at home. Mm-hmm. Like we generally fall into these. And so life stages and unexpected events tend to impact women in their time and men in their financial and their emotions, but not so much in their time. They usually still go to work. They still do those kinds of things unless they are the only child or the only person. And then it does usually fall to them. But in almost all of those examples, the aunts and the other women in the extended family will come in and support that male. And they don't necessarily come in and support that female when she's in the same role. So it's all of that, the money and time issue, especially for women, your time will be sucked away by other people voluntarily and involuntarily. You will want to be the primary parent and the primary household person and the primary, like you'll want to do all of these things. So you will, even if given the opportunity for someone else to help you or relinquish it to, you will choose to keep it. I wanted to be the primary parent. I wanted to be the primary estate person. I wanted to do all of those things. And so you'll wear many hats and then you won't have as much leisure time. It's a choice. So it is mm-hmm. a time and money equation. The other thing I'll say, Deborah, is I am the oldest on both sides of my mom's and dad's family of the cousins. And mm-hmm. there are my sister and I, she's 4 years younger than me. And on both sides of the family, we have cousins that are about our age. And then there's a big span of time. And then there are a bunch of these younger cousins. Mm-hmm. And in the last 2 years, there have been babies born, like more babies than my eyeballs can. I can't even, if I were to count them now, I'm going to miss them. But like 12 babies, like lots of babies, lots of babies. And the majority of my cousins are 48, 44, 40, 43, like they are older or they are in their early 30s. They're not having babies young like I did. They got married later. They had their babies later. They had infertility issues, whatever. Mm-hmm. Babies, as far as my eyeballs could see. Of course, I can't travel and hug any of them, but there are lots of babies. And there are a lot of things happening later in life than they used to. And we're going to live a lot longer than we used to. So expand your horizon. I used to think that everything would be done by the time I'm 50. I'm going to be 50 in a year. Let me just tell you, I'm only half done. I'm only half baked. Mm-hmm. Like 50 more years. Oh my goodness, I have to create a whole new vision for what's the next 50 years going to be. And in your 20s and 30s, you think, if I don't have it done by the time I'm 40, it's not even worth it. Oh, please. Like, there's so much. There's so much that's going to happen after you're 40, including maybe having a family. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's, do that too.
I love that. And I think you talk about that in non-specific ways a lot of just, you know, I think about this, I was thinking about this earlier this week that Organize 365, I kind of was relatively early on, on the podcast listening train, I guess. And just thinking about how much growth there has been even since I started listening in your company. And I was just like, wait, Lisa started that company when she was 40. So why am I so nervous that my life is already set and like, I'm not going to be able to do anything new. And I am 32. Like,
and baby, I think, you're such a baby.
Exactly. So maybe my generation is focusing more on our careers in our 30s. And then we shift to family, maybe more in our later 30s and 40s. It's just kind of like swapping the two phases of life, I guess, or events, I guess, in life. And I think that's a pretty common thing. Just generationally.
Yeah, I see it a lot in millennials having babies later on purpose and not on purpose, but having already established a pretty hefty career. Mm-hmm. Whereas myself, I jumped right into the baby thing. I had no career to go back to. Like I had to establish a career from nothingness when I decided to do it. And also that balance, I honestly think I'm observing, you know, it's not just my husband that realized how to be the primary household person or that laundry doesn't happen magically. Like everyone being at home for a year really leveled the gender equality field very quickly. Like first couple months you can like pretend to have two different roles, but now it's like, you want socks? You know where the washing machine is. Of course, we did get a new washing machine. My husband put the pod where you're supposed to put liquid stuff and almost broke our brand new washing machine. So he did get out of doing laundry again for the rest of his life. That is one way to do that, by the way. Don't break my brand new washing machine. Bye-bye. You can just...
You're fired.
I can move things to the dryer, he said. I'm like, great. You can move things to the dryer. That could be your role in the laundry. There is a shift that is speeding up at home because of the pandemic. So if you want to look at something good from the pandemic, that's one thing we have.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like the friends that I do have who have kids, like, and if both of them are working, they both kind of have to learn to figure out their schedules together and who's going to entertain the kids while the other's on a Zoom call. It's definitely been an issue, I think, for a lot of people. Like, I'm very glad that it hasn't been an issue for me, just because I'm not in the place where that could be easily handled. And I feel for my friends and family who are dealing with those issues. But I think that on the other end of things, it could definitely lead to a more egalitarian split of the work, I think.
I think that, and I also think that how we raise kids and what they're exposed to and when and how often, and by that I mean like schooling. Like, what is school going to look like after this? I'm not saying we need to get rid of schools, but is school really a, you know, 7-4 experience or an 8-3 experience because that's when the workday is? If the workday is shifted, does the school shift? Is what we're teaching in the schools, and I've been saying this for a long time, and we carry around a computer in our pocket. Alexa and Google know everything. So how much of the rote memorization that is still in schools is necessary, whereas learning how to interpret real-time events and earn money and be a contributing member to society, those have value as well. What do we do with children birth through age 5? Is that a preschool? Is that a daycare? Is that more of a cooperative thing? Is there more of a flex schedule? I just think that there are going to be a lot of different solutions that come out, a lot of unique solutions, some that are tried and failed, but I don't think we'll go back to the way it was because I don't think parents are going to want to be that separated from their kids again. I think they would like some separation. there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it needs to be, you know, that a third of their life and, you know, half of their waking hours are spent away from parents just so that they can do a job. I don't know if we'll go back. I don't know if people will readily accept that again.
Yeah. And if they do, I think maybe what we teach maybe will be different. I don't know. I'm not in that realm. But you just made me think of this. I had a teacher in junior high and high school who taught us a lot about metacognition. That was like one of his big words. And he really was teaching us how to learn.
Yeah.
And I think that that is far more important than, you know, what he taught us in history class. Like they're both important, but I think that just practically the teaching how to learn and how to think about your thinking was far more important to me and has had much more impact than the actual class material.
And that's very similar to Montessori. I mean, there is a curriculum that they follow, but basically if a child's interested in something else, you do the something else. In our Montessori school, you had a certain amount of math and a certain amount of reading that you had to get done. You could do it all on Monday, or you could do it all on Friday, or you could spread it out. But then once that basic was done, you were in charge of what you wanted to learn more about. Like in our classroom, oh, it's fantastic. We taught middle school. I mean, whatever the students and Leslie were interested in, we were like in the magic school bus and on that on that trail for however long it was. And it was usually current event related. And the kids learned so much. Like learning is so interesting. Like you obviously are a learner, Deborah. Do you want to not be learning? Look at how much schooling you went to. I would love to go get my PhD. Like we are lifelong learners. It doesn't have to be relegated to, you know, 8 to 3, Monday through Friday, however many weeks of the year.
Yeah.
It's just how do we make that kind of a shift in a society? We're moving from the industrial age is what we're doing. And it will be messy.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
Well, I don't want to keep you all day. Of course, I can talk all day.
I also know you have 6 meetings today. I saw your Instagram.
Yes, you're number 4 of my
meetings. All right. You're getting there.
So let's end with these. What do you have more of?
I think, like I talked about, more grace, I think, for myself and more encouragement and motivation. Like I have these resources for when the days sometimes get rough, and I have resources that I can go to get a little pick me up. Like, hey, you're doing okay. You're doing great. Just one thing at a time. And you know, you're making progress, and that's what's important.
I love that. What do you think you have less of?
I think less floundering is kind of what I wrote on my application. I think less feeling like I'm drowning in the to-dos and the trying to get it all right and trying to adult well. Sometimes you just are an adult. You don't have to do it well. You don't even have to, you know, and I think that feeling of floundering, it still happens but being more okay with it and more accepting of it as a thing. And it does happen far less than it did before.
Yeah. I think we're afraid we might go back to the way it was. And so every time that life reality hits us, we're like, no, I don't want to go back to where I was. Where I was in the past, but you're not going to. Like your mindset has changed. You have more resources, you have more strategies. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. What do you wish you had known sooner?
I wish I had known more in depth about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think that those episodes have been really important for me to kind of understand where I am kind of in that pyramid. And be okay with, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to self-actualize all the way up right now because, you know, I'm trying to figure out my sleep issues and being okay with that. I wish I had kind of known that sooner.
Yeah, I really enjoyed recording those episodes, and there's a lot we're doing in the future where we'll be pulling some of that back. I'm excited about that.
Nice.
So what's your next step?
I think right now, just continue taking it one day at a time. Especially with the unknowns of how the world's going to change in these next few months. And so just taking it one day at a time.
And is there any advice that you would give to someone who's just starting out? Maybe this is the first podcast they've found and they're like, whoa, this is a different conversation.
I think one of the big things for me would be not to get discouraged or turned off of the podcast or the program or anything, just because you're not in a place where you can't invest and go all in right away. I wasn't sure you would have me on the podcast because I haven't used any, like I haven't purchased any of your products. I haven't done the 100-day home organization challenge. And I think that it's important for people to know that you don't have to do that to have that mind shift change and to, you can make progress just wherever you're at. And you are so generous with your time and your company that there are a lot of free resources available to get into mm-hmm. it. And when the time comes and you can jump in, go for it. But don't be discouraged just because you're not there yet. And then my second piece of advice would be pick a program and stick with it. So if Lisa jives with your style, do Lisa's project. Don't try to pick and choose from as many different resources just in case you're missing the one key thing. Like that's not going to help. That just gets you overwhelmed, because I am guilty of that very much so. And I don't remember if I heard it from you or if it was someone else I listened to that said, pick a program and just stick with that and do that all the way through. And so that would be the other piece of advice to either somebody new or, you know, to myself as well, of pick a program and just follow through all the way from there, rather than trying to cobble together the best ofs, because the internet's too big.
It is too big. I do the same thing, like with business podcasts and things like that. I usually pick a coach for 6 to 18 months. I think Dan Sullivan was 18 months because he was so meaty, but usually a coach will only last me about 6 months. I listen to every single podcast. I read all of their books. And then if I still want more, I will go and I will buy their programs and I will work one-on-one with that coach usually. And then I go the next one and the next one and the next one. And the truth is, no program is the magic sauce. Like, there's nothing about mine or somebody else's program that is going to magically make you more organized. It is the person you're becoming listening to the podcasts and going through the courses that gets you organized. It's not me. Same with those business people that I work with. Like, they have great programs. Like, there are a bazillion trillion of them out there. And it's not that one program that I get that is the, you know, the thing that made Organize 365 grow that year. It's the fact that I am continually growing and I am continually seeking new information, new ways of doing things, assimilating that with everything else I've already done and continually improving myself, which improves my home life, my company, and my professional development. Same with you. I'm not the answer. You are the answer. I'm just hoping to unlock some of that for you that's inside of you already.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And of course, from all of the people you've had on your podcast, like, I absolutely think that your programs do work and they're great. But again, it's about that mindset shift. So just because you can't buy in all the way, like, you can do the mindset shifts, you know, on your own for free.
Definitely. Deborah, thank you so much for being on the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun to get to talk to you.
Are you ready to share your transformational story with me and the rest of the Organize 365 community? We would love to hear it. Please go to organize365.com/Wednesday and fill out an application. I cannot wait to see your application in my email inbox.